This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about the Supreme Court's constitutional right of same-sex marriage decision in Obergefell versus Hodges and the dissenting justices' arguments that the decision threatens democracy and religious liberty. My guests are Janet Lee Frankel, a family law specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Her office is in San Francisco. My other guest is Myron Moskowitz, professor of law emeritus at Golden Gate University in constitutional law and currently appellate law practitioner. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies 11 fields of law, not only family law, but appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the family law section of the State Bar of California and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Janet and Myron, welcome to the program. Great to have you both back here. Myron, if you would, give us a little summary of Obergefell versus Hodges, would you? And
sure.
Then we're going to talk about some of the issues that, frankly, I think a lot of people might be thinking about.
Okay. Before I do, Chuck, I just want to say hello to my little boy, Ari, who's I hope listening in.
All right. Hello there.
this very case from the U.S. Supreme Court that came down in June, Obergefell versus Hodges, arose because there was a conflict among the lower courts throughout the country as to whether it's a violation of the Constitution for states to refuse to recognize gay marriage. Most of the courts had said it did violate the Constitution, but the Federal Appeals Court for the Sixth Circuit held that it did not violate the Constitution and upheld the marriage as one man, one woman laws from Michigan, Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee. So the case involves the same issue that arose from California in the Hollingsworth case a couple years ago, but then the court declined to get to the merits of the issue, but this time they did. And a majority of the court, five of the justices, held that it did violate the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, maybe the Equal Protection Clause, too. The opinion's a little bit unclear on that. And four justices dissented in three separate dissents. So the present status of the law now is states must recognize gay marriage.
Well, let me mention who the justices were for the majority. Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote the opinion, joined by Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, Justice Sotomayor, and Justice Kagan. The dissenters are Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, and Justice Alito. What comments, Janet, at this point, since you are a family law specialist under California law, what reaction do you have to this decision?
Well, interesting. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Janet.
Nice to be here. Interestingly, as a family law practitioner, the effect of this opinion is negligible. In California, it was already the law. We had
Under Hollingsworth
and Perry, and same-sex couples have been marrying ever since. And they also were able to marry for a few months in 2008. And that was after the In Re marriage cases. So it doesn't have a lot of impact. It doesn't change the way I practice.
Mm-hmm.
I will note that in my experience with my clients, being married, having same-sex marriage is a whole different animal from having a domestic partnership. We have had domestic partners in California for a long time. I think that was initially passed by Davis.
Governor Davis,
yeah.
Former Governor
and
Davis,
so,
yes.
the partnership, Domestic Partnership Act in California ultimately decreed that domestic partners are treated exactly like spouses, but in fact, they're not exactly like spouses. And one of the big differences was you could maybe file a California joint tax return, but you couldn't file a federal.
A federal return, yes.
So then after Windsor, that changed too 2 years ago. Also came down on the same day, June 26th.
Just about the same day,
right. Windsor said that the federal government cannot refuse to recognize gay marriages that states have allowed. And so if you're in a state that allow gay marriage, they'd have to accept a joint tax return.
So they have to honor a valid same-sex marriage from another state.
Myron, I know you are, in discussing this with you both before today and also before we went on the air on this day, you are somewhat concerned about what the majority did. Why are you?
Well, I think gays should have the right to marry, and I know you do. I just want to get that on the table.
Sure.
I don't disagree with anything the majority said about the importance of marriage and the importance to gays. The problem is, what role do we want the Supreme Court to play in our society? This is a situation where democracy seemed to be working very well. I mean, gays participate very well in the democratic process, and they were becoming more and more successful. And it's probably just a matter of time before they had gay marriage allowed in all states. The Supreme Court intervened. The Supreme Court used the Constitution to intervene and basically overrule the democratic process in these states. Now, there are times when I think it's perfectly appropriate with a court to do that.
Would you say that it's appropriate to do that when there's a fundamental right at stake?
Well, the problem with that is who decides what's a fundamental right? The word fundamental right is not in the Constitution. It comes about because the 14th Amendment is so vague. The Supreme Court created a jurisprudence around it to define what life, liberty, and property mean, because you can't deprive someone of due process. The state can't deprive someone of due process and take
including
away life, liberty, or property.
Right.
So the issue often comes up with the word liberty, and that's where they get this term fundamental right. The problem is, who decides what's a fundamental right? If it's the justices, how do they do it? Do you really want to leave it to the personal preferences of individual justices? Liberal justices might say gay marriage is a fundamental right. Conservative justices might say, as they did back at the beginning of the 20th century, that the right to make any contract you want is a fundamental right. And they did this in this famous Lochner versus New York case to say that states could not provide for maximum working hours. They couldn't limit the number of hours that bakers work to 60 hours a week.
That was a New York law.
It was a New York law that the Supreme Court shot down because a majority of the conservative justices felt that people should have the right to make any contract they want. Mm-hmm. And that led to other decisions knocking out minimum wage laws, safety laws, consumer protection laws, because people have the right to contract. Mm-hmm. Now, that was eventually overruled by late 1930s and 1940s, when Roosevelt threatened to pack the court because they were shooting down all his New Deal legislation, too. But those opinions were just as legitimate as Obergefell. If a judge has a right to adopt his own notion of what's fair and use the Constitution to veto democracy, conservatives can do it as well as liberals.
Well, if the Constitution is somewhat vague as to what defines life, liberty, and property, how do we know what is a fundamental right?
Well, there was a case called Washington versus Glucksberg a couple of decades ago, where the Supreme Court said, we need to limit ourselves, the judges. So we're going to find a fundamental right only if it's historically been recognized in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not us. Mm-hmm. It's the American people who have made this a tradition. And Obergefell, that just doesn't work.
Well, you can't say
there's a traditional right to gay marriage because until very recently, every state has outlawed it.
Yes.
So would you say that there's a traditional right to marry? Is there a fundamental right to marry?
Well, it depends on what the word marriage means, which has never been in question until this case. It's always been assumed to be a man and a woman. Would you have a fundamental right to marry your dog or marry a rock?
Two plants should be able to marry each other.
Or two plants, yeah. I mean, it's not that easy just to say there's a fundamental right to marry, that the word marriage means something. I mean, different states allow marriage depending on which age you are, certain health conditions. There's always been variation, mm-hmm. and there's always been a state issue.
For example, Utah had to choose between joining, becoming one of the states, or and giving up its polygamy laws.
Right.
And it had to do that to become a state.
Yeah. Now, the majority seems to be saying that the Supreme Court has come up with some tests to limit itself. So it's not just based on personal preference. So the fundamental right has to be based in tradition. The Equal Protection Clause has been applied by a certain structure, depending on what kind of right is involved, whether it's fundamental right or whether the distinction a legislature makes is based on religion or race. And the majority in Obergefell doesn't talk about any of that. So it kind of looks like the court has lost its moorings.
The justices, I think, dissenting justices, I think all four of them, have written that they believe that this majority opinion is a threat to democracy. Would you go that far?
Well, it depends on how pure you want your democracy. It's a threat to pure democracy. Now, I'm not sure we want pure democracy. Maybe we want nine very intelligent older people to come along and say, this time you've gone so far, too far, and democracy is overruled. Maybe that's a good idea.
Pure democracy is that we, the people, vote on everything.
That's right.
Every decision that is made, no matter what, we vote on it.
Yeah, it really just comes down to who has the better television commercials.
Well, that may be. Or who has the more money.
That's what our country, the most money. That's what defines our country's democracy.
Yeah.
Well, that may be true, but would you rather have a king?
I would prefer to have a Supreme Court put the brakes on a democracy run amok.
Well, that's exactly what the conservatives said in this Lochner case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is that what you want? I could see that coming back. I think if someone like Ted Cruz or Scott Walker is elected president, they're going to have appointments to make, and they're going to select judges who want to resurrect Lochner or something like it. Mm-hmm. I can almost guarantee it. Because,
in other words, allow states to restrict working hours? Or
no, the states can already do it. No, just the opposite. They would use the Constitution to prevent states from regulating working hours, minimum wages, worker safety, mm-hmm. consumer safety. I think they would want to do that.
And be a big carte blanche to business and corporations.
Yeah.
So basically go against everything that unions have been fighting for.
Yeah, and the argument for that, based on the Constitution, is pretty strong. It's stronger than the argument for gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about what gave rise to the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, this case was based on the 14th, mm-hmm. it was slavery.
Yeah.
What does the end of slavery mean? It means people can bargain with their employers, mm-hmm. which they couldn't do as slaves.
Yeah.
And so the argument that there should be a right to freedom of contract in bargaining with employers is pretty strong.
So you're saying...
I'm not saying it's a good idea. Yeah. I don't want them to resurrect Lochner. But the argument for it is pretty strong. And this opinion kind of gives them license. I mean, they can say, if liberal judges can do it,
so can
conservatives
the conservative.
Can do it. Sure. Why not? It's just a matter of who gets elected president and who's appointed.
Isn't the court just following precedent that marriage is a fundamental right and that people also have a right to be free from race discrimination and from discrimination based on sexual orientation? So the right to marry, to create this two-union contract, this two-union intimate association, two-person union, can't be restricted based on sex, based on gender or sexual orientation. I think that the majority opinion did address those things. The majority opinion went into principles and tradition and talked about the importance of a two-person union, talked about the importance of personal autonomy in deciding who you can marry, as was discussed in Loving, talked about how to safeguard families. And there's so many families now that have two same-sex parents or single parents. And I think with the advances that we have now in the ways that people can conceive children,
you don't need to be married.
You don't need to be married. You don't even need to have sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, those are all very good arguments in favor of the right to gay marriage. I'm not sure they're good arguments in favor of the Supreme Court deciding that.
Mm-hmm.
That you mentioned precedent. There is no precedent from the Supreme Court defining the word marriage. They just assumed in the past it was between a man and a woman. So there's no precedent on that. The tradition was all always against gay marriage. It was a crime. Until Lawrence v. Texas, it was a felony. You go to jail.
Well, the fact that something was a crime in the past doesn't mean that it was good, that it was the right thing ever. I mean, it was also a crime to be. It was a crime to marry, to have interracial marriages too.
Yeah. Well, Loving was based in large part on the racial discrimination part, which makes sense. The Civil War was about race. The 14th Amendment was primarily about race. So that makes sense.
Let me interrupt both of you for a moment and let people know, in case they tuned in a little bit late. This is Your Legal Rights, Public Radio. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Janet Lee Frankel, a family law specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. My other guest is Myron Moskowitz, professor of law emeritus at Golden Gate University in constitutional law. He's currently now an appellate law practitioner in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. For those of you who are listening to the live program, and we're doing this on August 5th, 2015, by the way, I will be giving you in a few minutes a toll-free number, and you can call in and ask questions, make comments if you'd like. And I hope that you will. As a matter of fact, let me give you the number now and you can jot it down. We won't be taking any calls for another close to 12 minutes or so. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. Myron, let me turn to something. One of the things that I think is a real concern of a lot of people is that the majority decision in Obergefell versus Hodges is that this is going to create a problem of freedom of religion. What comments do you have on that?
Well, the Constitution doesn't bar private people from discriminating based on anything. The Constitution restricts government, doesn't restrict private people. But there's many statutes and state laws and congressional laws that do. So Congress bars discrimination based on race and religion in interstate commerce. California bars it based on a whole bunch of things, and so does San Francisco. A number of places around the country do. They bar it in private individuals, right? So this is not constitutional law. It's just state law and federal law that bars it. So this situation might arise. So gays have the right to marry now under Obergefell. They do get married. And some private person who's involved in a business, a landlord, let's say, won't rent to people who've been married, gay marriage, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Why? If it's just a matter of personal preference, they're going to lose. They have no constitutional right to that personal preference because they've entered the marketplace. They've decided to become a landlord, and these laws apply to them. They mm-hmm. they can't say, I don't like blacks. They can't say, I don't like gays. They've got to mm-hmm. rent to them, all right? Mm-hmm. So that's easy. All right. The problem comes up is that they say, I won't rent to people who've been married or gay because my religion is against that.
Uh-huh.
Now, if the state comes along and orders them to do it anyway or penalizes them for not doing it, they're going to have a First Amendment argument. They're going to have an
argument. Freedom of religion.
That's right. I'm exercising my religion. Mm-hmm. Now, let's take the easiest case. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's a church.
Yes.
Some particular religion says we don't recognize gay marriages. You can't use our church. The church is going to win, right? I mean, that's pure religion. Religions can pretty much believe anything. They could keep blacks out if they want.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's easy. The harder issue is when you're out in secular society.
Would you stop there for a moment?
Yeah.
When you say they can keep blacks out, on what basis? On what constitutional basis can they keep blacks out
We're
of their church?
We're a white power religion. We're whites only in our religion. I don't know if there is a religion
really?
Like that. Of course they can. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, your religious
beliefs.
You got
me on that one. I didn't
Well, they're not the government.
Yeah,
They're private people, and they have a religious right to believe whatever they want. I mean, can Catholics say we won't take any Jews? Yeah, sure. Can a landlord say we won't take Jews? No.
No.
It's quite different.
That's a business.
Yeah. All right. So the difficult question is when you go out in the marketplace and you hire people, do you, to some extent, surrender that religious belief? You're
mm-hmm.
entitled to religious
mm-hmm.
belief, but
mm-hmm.
when you go out in public, do you give that up to that extent?
You give up some of your freedom to contract.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still
Well, there's
stuck
no question
on...
you do. I mean, you become a landlord. I mean, rent control. I mean,
sure.
all these
sure.
laws come down in your head. If you're an employer, you got even more to deal with. There's no question. When you enter those marketplaces, you give up a lot. The question is how much. Now, this Hobby Lobby decision that came down last year says mm-hmm. even if you incorporate, you have the right to your religious beliefs.
But that was a close corporation. That means a family business.
A family affair.
Yeah.
And it involved, one would say, direct assistance to something they didn't believe in. It was mm-hmm. contraceptives,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Contraceptives in a situation where it's kind of similar to abortion. And the court said, not by constitution, but by statute,
mm-hmm.
This congressional statute dealing with religion, they were protected, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to gay marriage, I don't know. I think it may depend on the connection between the particular business and what is mm-hmm. what their gripe is, all right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I could see the court saying a bakery that's asked to create a wedding cake or a tuxedo company that, in other words, if they're giving direct assistance to the wedding, you can't make them do that if they have a religious objection.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if they're already married and all they want to do is work for you, let's say, where's the intrusion on your business at all?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not helping them get married. They've already gotten married. And nobody at work has to know they're married. I could see the court making distinctions like that.
Let me throw this one to you. When the Obergefell decision came down, there was some reporting going around that people who were working in local governments, this is the government, the county government, yeah, et cetera, were concerned that, gee, I don't want to issue a marriage license to two gay persons. What right does someone have who's employed by the government to say, I my religion doesn't recognize this, I do not want to assist someone by giving them the marriage certificate?
I think that's a really hard question.
Do you?
I do, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You work for the government, then you carry out the policies of your government.
Not of your religious
right.
belief.
I mean,
okay, pardon me,
I mean,
I misunderstood what you said.
Your assigned job is to give out traffic tickets or fines or marriage licenses. You don't get to pick and choose, you know. Now, if you have a religious objection, that makes it really hard. I mean, could you be fired is the ultimate question.
I think that's an issue, yes.
If you know, the government could say, look, the Supreme Court has said we got to get this done. If all the clerks say this, we can't get it done. If it's just one, you know, maybe it's not that. But I think it's that kind of balancing that I think a court might do.
Well, that's very good. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that tough of a question. I don't think, I mean, obviously there's a balancing that the court would do, but if you're employed by the government and you need to be issuing licenses, oh, we're getting the warning flag here.
Well, go ahead. Keep talking. You've got half a minute. Go ahead.
if you're working for the government and your job is to issue licenses, that's what you have to do. And even if you look at the Supreme Court decision in Windsor, I think it supports the idea that you have to honor, if you have to honor valid marriages, then and you work for the government, and you also have to honor the obligation to issue those licenses.
I could see a new hire having to do it because they know. They're on notice.
Let's take a brief break, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, everybody. This is Your Legal Rights. I want to give you the phone number in case you have some questions, some comments, you'd like to participate in this. This is the toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We are being heard across the country, both on the Internet at www.kalw.org and in the last couple of months on the National Public Radio satellite. And so wherever you may be, whether it's in the state of California or you're in some other state or wherever you may be, I'd encourage you to join us with your questions, your comments, perhaps your criticism of whatever we have said at this point, or perhaps the Obergefell decision. The number again, 866-798-8255. Let me just tell you who my guests are in case you are a little bit late in the program. We are discussing, by the way, the decision that the Supreme Court came down with on June 26th of this year, Obergefell versus Hodges, which is the same-sex marriage decision, the constitutional right under the Due Process Clause. We've been talking about the dissenting justices' arguments that the decision threatens democracy and religious liberty. My guests are Myron Moskowitz, professor of law emeritus at Golden Gate University in constitutional law. Currently, he's an appellate law practitioner in the San Francisco Bay Area, primarily. My other guest is Janet Lee Frankel, a family law specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Her office is in San Francisco. I do not want you, everyone, to be silent. I'd like to have you participate in this, so please feel comfortable to call in with your comments, your concerns, if you have any. If you are someone who's been confronted with this and you feel it's unfair that you have to deal with gay persons in your business, let's hear what you have to say. If you are someone who is a gay person, whether you're married as a gay persons or not, and you've been unfairly treated by a business, I'd like to hear from you also. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. And this is for those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area, both in San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They will do their best to find someone who is experienced for you and set you up for half an hour consultation. And with rare exception, the cost for half an hour consultation ranges from $25 to $35. Does not go to the attorney, goes to the lawyer referral service to support the service. For those of you who are looking for a certified specialist, one of the 11 in certified specialties in California, the number that you might want to call, statewide number, is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the website. It's www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the left of your screen for legal specialists, and you'll find out in your geographic area who the legal specialists are in any one of the 11 specialties, and can call for help there. For those of you who are interested, and I want to let you know that in the last 2+ months, we have gone on the public radio satellite due to the new funding of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. If you'd like to know more about them, the website for the National Board of Trial Advocacy is www.nbtalawyers.org, nbtalawyers.org. You are very quiet out there, and I'm very surprised that those of you who listen to this program regularly are reticent to call in. I mean, this is a major, major decision that came down, and I'm interested, as are my guests, in having comments from you. So I'm going to give you the phone number again. It's a toll-free number, so this is not going to cost you anything. 866-798-8255. We are doing this program live on August 5th. And so if you get this program and you hear it delayed, like next week, it's too late to call the toll-free number. And for those of you who are interested, we will do Call a Lawyer Night again at the end of this month on August 26th. At that point, we will be doing a family law program that evening, as I believe. And so we will have a number of attorneys here in the conference room who will be taking calls off the air on our 800 number. And that's, again, the last Wednesday of this month, August 26th, for Call a Lawyer. And you can talk with the lawyers off the air, no obligation whatsoever on your part. It's a major service that these lawyers are performing, and they come here not just for the pizza that I order, believe it or not, but because they want to serve the public and be here. Janet has done it a number of times.
I come for the pizza.
Janet comes for the pizza. And maybe that's what most of them come here for. All right. I see some of you would like to talk with my guests, and I'd like to have you do that. One of the things that I have a real problem with, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but Justice Thomas, in dissenting, he said, quote, "The majority's decision threatens the religious liberty our nation has long sought to protect," end quote. He also said this, quote, "Human dignity..." And he continued this quote, "Slaves did not lose their dignity because the government allowed them to be enslaved," end quote. And I felt that frankly, was way out of base. What comments do you have about that before we take our first call in a minute or so?
Yeah, a lot of people had a problem with that.
I think so.
But the point he was making was that the majority emphasized that gay people have a right to dignity, and being deprived of the marriage license itself interfered with their dignity. Mm-hmm. And Thomas and I think some of the other justices said there's no dignity provision in the Constitution.
That's true, yes.
The word doesn't appear there. The word liberty does. Mm-hmm. And Thomas points out liberty means freedom from government interference, not something the government bestows on you. So that's where he was coming from. I mean, that's why...
I think he went too far, though.
He may have. Yeah. He may have.
Okay. And the majority, I think, is talking about a concept of dignity and respect, and not just the innate human dignity that you have as a person. And so I think it was unfair of Thomas to focus on that in that way.
Well, let's take our first call. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening. I'm hearing a very academic argument from Myron. I think that's great. It's interesting because I don't hear this in the mainstream media, who, not for nothing, loves to trumpet and celebrate and all that. But there's very little in-depth actual thinking going on.
Well, Ken, let me tell.
My question.
Let me interrupt you for just a moment. I want you to know that Myron Moskowitz, as a constitutional lawyer and professor, has practiced as a professor in constitutional law for 40 years. And that's why he's such an authority, frankly.
Well, let me say something else.
Yeah.
I don't think my point was academic at all. What I'm saying is this decision serves as a precedent for a conservative president to appoint a conservative majority on the Supreme Court that would do tremendous damage to protections we now have for workers and consumers, because that's what happened back in the Lochner era. That could be revived very easily, and I think a series of decisions along those lines would be just as justified as this one.
Okay.
And that can happen. That's a real possibility.
Ken, what is your question?
Now, so my comment is, both guests, was there anything in the justices' comments, dissent especially, and I kind of think of Alito as half a lunatic, were there comments that I understand your arguments legally? At least I've heard them. I don't know if I understand them all, but I'm interested to hear if you were taken aback or there are just things that struck you in the justices' comments and you go, really? That wasn't the way I looked at it. But, you know, can you parse out or pull out a few gems or giblets, shall we say?
Okay. Well, let me see if we can. Ken, thank you very much for calling and with your comment and your question. And let's see what Myron is going to do.
It's easy to pull out some gems from Scalia's opinion. I mean, it's a very interesting...
entertaining.
It's entertaining. And I thought the way majority handled him was very clever because they recited how controversial this issue has been, how many courts have dealt with it, and they have a great line about, here it is, where Kennedy says these decisions have been written without scornful or disparaging commentary.
Yeah.
Now that's a barb at Scalia, who can't say good morning without scornful commentary.
Scalia said in a brief quote, "Today's judicial putsch, P-U-T-S-C-H, right, defined by the dictionary, a plotted revolt or attempt to overthrow a government, especially one that depends upon suddenness and speed, of German origin, by the way."
That's what Hitler did.
A
putsch.
Yeah, a putsch.
But, Scalia's got him all over the place, and he's aging, and I guess he's, instead of mellowing with age, he's going the other direction.
But I like the sentence where he interrupted himself to keep asking, really? What does that mean?
Yeah, I know, huh?
So, right.
And then he said in a footnote, If I said what the majority said, I'd hide my head in a bag. not terribly
Maybe
judicial,
you should do it anyway. Right. All right, Troy, welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that my partner and I basically bought a house in January of 2004 here in San Francisco with the TIC. And, of course, when I signed everything, and he actually had to go out of town for work, and I had to do his power of attorney. But after I signed everything, I had all these fears in my head. He was out of the country. He was up in Canada at the time. Then of course, came Valentine's Day, and the mayor of San Francisco said that we could get married. And what came through my head during those weeks before the mayor said that was I suddenly realized all these things could go wrong, but I realized the only thing that would have protected us was being married. And that was, to me, the main thing to me about marriage is not what you define about family. It's for protecting those who you consider your family.
That's very interesting.
And, you know, for me and him, we both were raised by single mothers, and if one thing happens to one of us or the other, getting those Social Security benefits help us to take care of our mothers.
Well, I would comment that we were discussing earlier whether there's a fundamental right to marry, and Myron was suggesting that there may be, but the definition of what is a marriage is the question.
Yes.
And I think from I've read this a couple times now, and
the Obergefell decision.
Yes. And although I'm not a constitutional law scholar, I see that the majority did look at history and tradition of what's going on in this country and did look at the problems that arise when some states have same-sex marriage and other states don't, and people are free to travel among the states here. And I think it's high time that the definition of marriage was changed so that same-sex couples weren't excluded from this two-person union that we have in this country.
It's a big cookie jar of rights you get.
Well, Troy, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your call. Again, our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. I would really like you to join us because it's very interesting when you contribute with your comments, your questions, your concerns. It makes it even a more interesting program. One of the things that I'd like to quote here that Justice Kennedy wrote in his opinion, which is the majority opinion, 5-4, he said, quote, "This is why fundamental rights may not be submitted to a vote. They depend on the outcome of no elections," end quotes. And I thought that was a particularly significant statement that he made, because obviously it took, you know, in terms of what was a tradition, we had prior to the Civil War the tradition of slavery or black people. It took the Civil War to change this. And frankly, there were a lot of people who suffered for a long time. Myron, what comments do you have about that?
Well, that's interesting, Chuck. When I was teaching constitutional law, one of the questions I would pose to my students is, assume you were a Supreme Court justice in the 1850s, before the Civil War, before the 14th Amendment, and a case came before you about the constitutionality of slavery. What would you do? And most of the students would say, well, I'd want to rule that slavery was unconstitutional. But then I'd point to various provisions in the Constitution before the 13th, 14th Amendment. You know, it recognizes slavery. You got the fugitive slave thing. You got several parts of it. How you count the votes. I said, how could you do that? You took an oath when you became a justice to support the Constitution. This Constitution endorses slavery. It seemed, nobody put a gun to your head and said you had to be a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
So I think that's the basic question here. I mean, do you use the Constitution to further your own policies?
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental right could be anything you want. I mean, that's why, as I said earlier, the Supreme Court in the Glucksberg case tried to tie itself down. tie its own hands and say, we can't just use our own preferences. It's got to be on tradition of the American people, because we're a democracy. Mm-hmm. And the majority opinion in Obergefell doesn't mention that. And they can't, because there's been no tradition in America of accepting gay marriage. It's been the opposite. It's been
yes,
a crime.
Yes. All right. The number again, toll-free, 866-798-8255. Martin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. When I was born, I got a birth certificate. I didn't get a baptism. If I wanted a baptism, my religion or naming ceremony or whatever could do that. When you want to get married, government should not be marrying you, which is a religious term, but should be giving you a civil union. And if you want to get married, you go to your church or synagogue or wherever you want to get that extra blessing. And that's the problem. The problem is that they've got the word marriage, which was the only way you could get a civil union, mixed up with civil union, which we now have.
That's a very good point. You know, I've heard some constitutional law professors argue along similar lines. What the hell is our states doing involved in giving marriage licenses anyway? Mm-hmm. It's a religious blessing on a union, and states should be giving simply, like he said, some kind of certificate that recognizes your union. There's certain benefits that flow from that, but the word marriage should not be given by the state at all. And there's even been, you know, speculation. I don't think it's going to happen. You know, we were talking about a fundamental right to marriage. Suppose a state decided we're out of the marriage business. We're not giving marriage licenses to anybody. Would that raise any constitutional issues?
Well,
I don't think so. I think they could do it. You want to get marriage? Go to church. We'll recognize a marriage given by a church or something, but we don't give out licenses. I don't see any constitutional problem with that because the Constitution prevents the state from interfering with things, but it doesn't make the state give you things.
What if you don't have any religious belief at all? Obviously, you can't go to a church and get married.
Well, but maybe you could get some certificate recognizing your union.
In California, you get a license to get married, and then you take that license to your church or to your priest or your rabbi or whoever's going to marry you, or you take it to a judge or someone mm-hmm. who can also marry you, and they're all based on the same license.
And what if you don't do it?
And
what
then
if
you just
don't follow through with it?
You just have to have an officiant. If you don't follow through with it, then it expires. It's a license to have someone perform a ceremony to officiate over your marriage. I think it's a 30 or 60
yeah.
days, something
but
like that.
But it doesn't have to be a religious person. It could be a judge.
It doesn't have to be.
No. But you can also, if you, let's say you're going to get married and have it be done by a religious person, you also can get a religious certificate in addition mm-hmm. to your mm-hmm. California license. So it is, I would say, Martin, it is in California a civil union. And for those people that get married in a religious ceremony, they get an additional religious confirmation of mm-hmm. that marriage. It's I don't think they're exactly the same thing. They both get the same license from the state to do it.
Martin, thanks for calling.
I mean, what was interesting about this case, as opposed to Hollingsworth arising from California, is I'm not aware that these states had a civil union provision for gays.
Mm-hmm.
So marriage meant everything for them.
Yes. That's
a good California, the litigation was about a word. You know, there was no difference in the benefits you get.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was about this word marriage. Now, of course, it did have an effect on federal benefits.
Sure.
But that was what the fight was about.
And, all right. Go ahead, Janet.
Oh, I was just going to say, Windsor didn't confer the federal benefits on domestic partners the same way.
No, it did not. It did not. All right. Reed, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. My question is, and this is somewhat related to the business of marriage, is whether the word family occurs in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. And what motivates this question is during the questioning, during the trial or whatever you want to, the hearing before the initial hearing before the Supreme Court, I think Justice Kennedy spoke about the children of same-sex unions or marriages and protecting them. I'm not sure whether that was a consideration that reappeared in his final opinion.
It did.
But I find it ironic. I mean, it had a certain emotional impact, I think. And I find it ironic that this issue of children was delinked early, especially in California, from the business of whether or not, you know, a marriage was possible without children. So that's why I asked.
Well, that's something that Alito talked about in his dissent, as he points out that marriage is inextricably linked to procreation, and then he of course has to admit that the tie between marriage and procreation is frayed. And actually, in fact, it doesn't exist. And there's cases that say that there's Supreme Court cases that say that strike down laws that say contraceptives can't be distributed to married couples. And so there is no requirement that you procreate in order to be married. There's no requirement that you have children. But to address your first point, Reed, is the question about whether he included that in his actual opinion. He did. He talked about
Justice Kennedy.
Justice Kennedy,
yes,
talked about the importance of having marriages for all people who are raising children, whether they're same-sex couples or opposite-sex couples, to have their unions be condoned and be given the government benefits and credit and, I guess, dignity and respect of equally.
Myron, any comments for Reed on that?
The main argument, one of the main arguments by the opponents of gay marriage was the whole point of marriage is for procreation for kids.
Right.
And Kennedy rebutted that by saying, recognizing gay marriage is going to help thousands of kids of gay marriages. Yeah, so that's how that came up.
Reed, thanks very much for your call. Glad you called. All right. We have Michelle. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to think there were two points. Again, like that the debate is about marriage and not homosexuality and how sometimes that can be lost in the confusion of, you know, everyone, I think, wants to acknowledge, you know, the rights of, you know, gay and lesbian men and women and show that they're loved and, you know, have full rights. But then there's that debate, you know, why marriage versus, you know, unions with all the same rights, but that language seems to really catch most people. And there's real debates over just that. And so that was my first question. Why can't we just make that differentiation with the language of that word, you know, union versus marriage? And then the second was, why would the Supreme Court, you know, not let the American people democratically decide this and keep the conversation going, which might, you know, in terms of really promoting gay and lesbian marriage, that would have really, or unions for that matter, would have really allowed more of the American people to be engaged, and now it seems more divisive. I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Well, Justice Thomas would agree with you. That's what his opinion is about. His dissent is that this was taken away from the American people as an issue to continue having a debate about and getting a resolution through the democratic process. I was curious, is your question that you want to change the word from marriage to union, or you want to create two separate types of things?
Well, I've heard different, you know, people on both sides, you know, saying that they wanted to keep, you know, gay and lesbian unions, like keeping it as, you know, the word union, but with full rights. And then like kind of the idea that actually the word marriage is very religious in its connotation and in describing kind of a blessing. And so why, you know, that kind of is like, well, why would the state be involved in that first day. So I think that's been some of the conversation and confusion with some of the debates going on is like we're kind of debating around kind of the same. Like, well, no, I think we're all in favor of people having the right, you know, these same fundamental rights. But when I think it gets kind of touchy-feely is when it enters into the realm of what seems to be religion and faith. And that seems to be conflated a bit.
Well, Michelle, thank you very much for calling. I want to take one more call before we end the program. Ken, you're back. What's up?
Yeah, I just had a follow-up. If religion can be used to defend against marrying people you don't want to marry, et cetera, is religion the decision, or could it be used as a basis for people to say, well, I want to marry the way my religion allows, for instance, polygamy, or is there any limitation on being able to marry more than one person?
Okay, good question. Myron, please.
Well, this point is made by one of the dissents. One thing the court had to briefly address, at least, was what are the arguments in favor of the voters who voted to prohibit gay marriage? And the majority says, we don't want to disparage these people, but they really have no good argument. And the dissent says, you just did disparage them. And these are voters who had reasons, and they're not all bigots. Maybe some of them are, but maybe some just are traditionalists. There's a number of things. But the basic argument against gay marriage is a moral one, and the court rejected that. They said, naked morality without any consequences. Gays getting married doesn't hurt you, doesn't hurt somebody else.
That's
so it's
right.
Just your moral feelings. Well, if that's their rationale, how does that apply to something like polygamy? Why are people opposed to polygamy? It's morally offensive. Why are people opposed to gambling? It's morally offensive. Prostitution is morally offensive. So all those laws are now vulnerable. Now, sure, you can find some practical effects, negative effects about gambling and prostitution, but not always. Not always. Mm-hmm. You can find situations where those are not harming anybody else. So,
but the court has defined marriage as a two-person union. That's in this opinion.
Yeah, they didn't get that from the Constitution. So, you know, gambling. I think the argument for outlawing. Well, Chuck wants to end it. Let's end it here.
Well, you're both wonderful, but we've come to the end.
Yeah, okay.
We've come to the end of the program. I want to thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Janet Lee Frankel, family law certified specialist by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and Myron Moskovitz, professor of law emeritus at Golden Gate University in constitutional law and currently an appellate law practitioner in the San Francisco Bay Area. Next week, I want to let you know what we're going to do, and that is, should the death penalty be abolished? My guest will be Mike Farrell, a political and social activist best known for the TV series MASH. He's president of Death Penalty Focus, which is a national organization. Tara Knight, certified specialist in criminal law advocacy by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, and Steve Wagstaff, San Mateo County District Attorney, second vice president of the California District Attorneys Association. I want you to know that funding for this program has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding of the program is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association, and also the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. I hope you join us next time. I'm Chuck Finney.